Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
Well, I was on hold and waiting for you guys to talk to me. Jaden Daniels is FaceTiming me, so I had to tell him, oh, I got to go on this show. I'll get back to you when I get off the show. So,
come on, coach.
On 95.7 The Game.
That was back when we thought Jaden Daniels might be nice, but before we knew that Jaden Daniels' next big thing.
Oh, he's nice.
Next big thing.
Bigger than Bo Nix as far as next
yes.
big thing?
Yes.
Because Bo Nix is getting a lot of buzz now.
Bo's good. What was that? What was that noise?
I don't know. A little
something? Boom. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bo Nix is nice. But for me, when people do this in the NFL, there's the big four. Big four quarterbacks, right? Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson. And then for a while last year, everybody's like, does anybody else belong in that conversation? Or who's next? Who's number five? Jaden Daniels. That'd be the next person I took off the board. Jaden Daniels. And I answer that without hesitation.
It's early. It's what?
It is.
1 year in?
Yep.
And so, I mean, small sample size Steve. We do that when we want to discount people or if we want to elevate them. But, yeah, so far,
I mean,
one down, one playoff berth.
And NFC title game as
good.
A rook.
He looked good.
Yeah.
And he looked every bit the part. And he didn't really quaver in the big moment.
Nope,
he played sure great the whole year.
My goodness. Yeah. What a phenomenal, phenomenal player. All right. On the football front, David Lombardi, SF Standard, will join us here in 25 minutes. All done with things at Niners camp today, and today was day three of three consecutive padded practices. Things were getting hot and heavy. There were some pushing and shoving, and we'll get all of the update from David Lombardi in Santa Clara coming up here in a little bit less than a half hour. Yeah, speaking of Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah, you kind of teased it.
I did tease it.
You said his name, and then you turn off the mic. Yeah. I don't know if that counts. It's
unorthodox.
Very.
Did it make you want to know how I was going to finish the sentence?
Kind of made me mad, to be honest. Like, it's not normally what you do.
Why do I have to do things that I normally do?
You don't, but
maybe I turned over a new leaf.
Yeah.
I'm now married and I've been to Jamaica. Like, maybe I'm a changed man.
Perhaps. You do have some hackneyed two-word accent that you've been trotting out.
Changed man.
That's right. He's a changed man,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, man.
Good God.
I ordered a drink out there called the Big Mac. Big Mac.
Two all beef patties, sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onion on a sesame seed bun?
No, actually the first ingredient is bourbon. Bourbon. Wait a minute. What do you got against bourbon?
A lot.
Why?
It's just not my my thing.
That's fine.
You don't need
to give it the gas face.
I prefer the clear liquors.
Okay, that's fine.
Like new vodka.
New vodka, yes.
If you'd let me vamp on it, maybe I get a piece of the deal down the road.
Probably not.
I don't think so, although the cucumber does sound refreshing and appetizing.
Listen, we had plenty of...
I'm liking it early, Mark. Thank you. I'm liking it early. A clear liquor, though, God. For me. Like, even
yeah, okay.
when it goes, to, when it, when I go to the tequila, I prefer the blancos as opposed to the colored, the light brown tequilas.
That's racist.
There you go. Austin and San Jose, thank you. Great. Join the list.
So what else is in the Big Mac?
I don't even remember, brother. I was drunk. Like, it was red. And, it was fruity. It was an island drink. Like, our favorite bartender, Terry Ann, they got one of those little menus sitting on the bar. And I'm like, hey, what's fun here? Because I'm already, like three vodka cranberries in. And I'm like, I need a taste of something else. What's good here? And she started telling me about a couple of the drinks that were her favorites. And one of them was the Big Mac. And if you ordered it, she'd yell it twice. And I really liked that. I enjoyed that. She'd go, Big Mac, Big Mac. And then everybody would go, Big Mac. And they'd make a Big Mac. And then I would drink it and get happy. It was red. There was things in it. But bourbon. There was bourbon.
Yeah. Something maybe either cranberry or grenadine.
No grenadine. No. Yeah. I'm not five.
Get a stiff Shirley Temple.
Shirley Temple. There were no cherries in it. But I try to look it up because I don't know if it was just this resort's thing or if it's a thing. Like, look up Jamaica Big Mac drink and then say it twice. Big Mac.
Okay.
Yeah, do that.
Never been a big bourbon guy, that's all.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a little bit like gasolina going down.
Gasolina. Here, Jamaica Big Mac drink recipe. I don't know. So anyway, but yeah, that's what happened.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You said it twice. So there you have it.
But anyway, back to speaking of Jonathan Kuminga, Mark Stein, who was on this show 2 weeks ago, might have been actually the last guest we had before I blew this popcorn stand. Mark Stein came on, and we love Mark Stein. Mark Stein is as tapped in of an NBA reporter who's out there, in my mind. And he had a report yesterday that I think has kind of gotten pushed under the covers because I think it's a pretty big freaking deal. He reported that a contract offer is on the table from the Warriors to Jonathan Kuminga, and he's got numbers. Now, I don't know if it's 100% accurate. I got no reason to doubt him. But I find it very interesting because we've all been talking about this guy and this situation for so long, and we've been guessing the entire time. How many times on this radio station have you heard someone be like, now, if the Warriors were to do 3 years and 65, or on the other end of the spectrum, like, is he going to just be stuck with the qualifying offer of 7.9? This actually defines it. He says the Warriors have offered Jonathan Kuminga 2 years and $40 million. And for me, that changes my opinion of this situation, this holdout, or this staring contest.
Right, right.
It's not a holdout.
Nope.
If that's on the table, as much as you could sell me on how life's not fair in restricted free agency right now, that is, all things considered, the situation, the team, the market, all things considered, that is a very fair offer. That is a very fair offer. And if Jonathan does not want to take that, I would question what it is that Jonathan thinks is going to happen next that's going to be better than that.
I would say he would channel his inner William Wallace, which would be freedom. If it's 2 years and 40 and it's a 2-year deal where it's not a player option for year two, it's just the team has you for 2 years and you really, really, really don't want to be here, then I could see where you might feel less enthused about $40 million for 2 years as opposed to 1 year and 7.9, bet on yourself, and then you do have that William Wallace. Oh. You've got the freedom. That's all I can think
of
because
expensive risk.
Potentially.
That's a $32 million risk.
In theory, but think about it from the other side. You play on the qualifying offer, and you do what you do. You got the ha-ha. You cook when you are allowed to cook with an apron, and then you're a free agent, and you go elsewhere when teams have more money. And could you then get, over the course of the next, not 1 year, you may not get 1 year and 32,
look at it as
which would be a break-even.
Or 4 years after that.
Can you then go out and get 4 years and $100 million? In an immediate deal in a place of your choosing, if you believe you can do that, that would be the only reason why I would look at the situation and think you might want to pass.
You could. That could happen. But again, what I'm thinking about, as we all are, is this is a risk-reward conversation. And what I would argue is it could go that way, but for it to go that way, once again, you have to be a Warrior for a year. You have to be a Warrior.
And they have to play you.
And they have to play you.
Yeah.
And then you have to put up those numbers, which, by the way, I would argue is highly unlikely.
I think it's more likely than you believe based on the fact you've got old guys on your team and you're going to need young people to play.
You're banking on injury, pretty much. You're banking on Steph or Jimmy or both getting somewhat significant injuries, and you may say that
not
that's
even that significant. I mean, none of them will play more than 70 games, I would bet.
Okay, that's fine, but that gives you a very small window of games where you need to go up and again, not just put up numbers, but you need to make other teams believe that you are that guy. And I would argue that a two-year, $40 million deal, A, is $32 million richer, guaranteed. B, it increases the likelihood of a trade. I'd argue if you want out, you're going to get out quicker by signing this deal, because I think the likelihood of you being traded in January is way better than if you sign that qualifying offer where you end up with effectively a no-trade clause and you're not making a number that even makes you tradable. Like, it's clearly a deal that suggests the Warriors are going to kick the can down the road. They've got your services, but they're going to keep trying to trade you, and they're going to trade you at a number that makes much more sense for them. And you get $32 million extra dollars for your time.
Perhaps it's 32. I mean, you're assuming that in year two of his qualifying offer, then free agency, that he would make nothing? And let's just say he's able to go out and make $20 million in that next contract elsewhere. Now you're only giving up $12 million,
right,
which is still $12 million, but you would figure you could go out and get a longer-term deal somewhere, and also you would then be able to control your own destiny. If you sign a two-year, $40 million deal with the Warriors, you're basically saying, trade me wherever the heck you want. And I don't know if he wants to give up that power.
Well, I would say that nobody's going to acquire Jonathan if they're not excited to have him and have him play a lot more, number one. But number two, we're still talking about a two-year deal. You're back to free agency by age 25.
That's right.
I mean, here's the other thing, and this is, I'm not even saying that you're wrong, because I don't know what the hell I would do. I just know that everyone I hear in NBA circles is like, the qualifying offer is not something he's going to do. He does not want to do that, and no one ever wants to do that. Like, I don't know. Nobody does that. Nobody chooses that option.
It happened, and we had the example when you were gone.
It's so rare,
though. Was it Ben Gordon, Lucas, the guy who played on the qualifying offer and went out and actually got a big contract after that? But it's like a less than 1 in 10 proposition. Right, like, historically, it usually doesn't happen.
And we've been told in this specific thing that he has no interest in doing that. So, I hear everything that you're saying, and I understand the thought process, but if we go under the idea that, he does not want to do that, okay, then take that off the table, and then the Warriors put 2 and 40 in front of you, I would ask Jonathan, dude, what the hell do you think's going to happen next if you don't sign that? And again, so he doesn't want to do the qualifying, he doesn't want to do 2 and 40 with the Warriors. What is it you think is going to happen? You think you can get him to get to 50? Do you think that these other teams are going to suddenly up their offer to the Warriors as we get later into the summer? I just don't think those things are going to happen. So, like, that's a pretty fair deal considering other reports that, for instance, Cam Thomas, restricted free agent right now with Brooklyn, is being offered $14 a year for a two-year deal. Like, I don't know, man. We've had a lot of conversations about Kuminga having to accept 15. If the Warriors are offering 40 over 2 years, that's about as flexible as I feel like this is going
to
get.
It's a tough one to resist. No doubt I look at that number, and I would feel in his camp that that's a tough one to resist because, like you said, even if things don't go great the next 2 years, and so far your experience here has not been wonderful,
right?
You would only be 25, and you would have 40 more million in the bank. And after 2 more years, assuming they don't trade you and you're here for 2 more years and you have to play it out, well, at that point, you're 25. You could be a free agent. Maybe the Warriors decide to keep you if Steph and Jimmy and Draymond are all gone. Who knows what happens in 2 years? That's a long time in an NBA lifespan, and also gives you the security of,
exactly,
you know, you're going to the African Cup here in a couple of weeks, and if something were to happen against Cape Verde, or if you eventually go up against another country and something bad happens, you'd be well taken care of. The only thing you're giving up is the ability to control your own destiny, which you have that right now, where you can kind of sit back and...
Do you?
Well, you do, in that you can play on the qualifying offer, and then have the right to refuse any trade.
Understood. But again...
But that's about all he has.
Right. Like, I'm sitting here going, who wants to sign up for, I would like, It's something between an ego stroke and a little bit sooner control. But I'll give up $32 million for that.
Well, you're not giving up the full 32.
But you are.
I get your point.
If your leg snaps, you did. You gave up $32 million so that you could have control a little bit earlier. I just think it's a bad bet. If I was his agent, I'd be like, that's a no.
Well, and his agent's already circling back on, we never turned down $30 million. So I think already...
I don't think they did. I agree with him.
Well, whatever...
The Warriors never made a firm offer to Jonathan
Kuminga. Whatever the
Kuminga.
Firm offer, the conversations were, whatever happened last offseason, I would bet it was greater than $20 million a year. That's my own gut on where we were last year. And whatever they... either turned down or didn't turn down, here we are, and it's late July, and your client is still unsigned.
Yep. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station, and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios, and David Lombardi will join us in a little bit over 10 minutes after Niners camp today. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like you've already made what is likely, and I want to acknowledge, I don't know, and as you just said, I don't know exactly how those conversations went last year. I have been told that the Warriors and Kuminga, it never got to a firm offer. Nobody ever slid the paper over to Jonathan's side of the table. But were there discussions that were more general about, we're thinking about something in this range? Yeah, maybe, probably.
And he wanted the max.
And were those over 20? Almost assuredly. And as Jonathan's agent, you bet that was not what you wanted to do. You decided, no, let's not do that. Let's wait for restricted free agency. And I would argue that that has turned out to have been a bad bet. So now you get to do it again. Do you want to push chips into the middle of the table again? Do you want to now turn down 2 and 40 so that you could either do what? Whether it's a qualifying offer, whether his agent is still on the phone with the Suns and the Kings and whoever else to be like, come on, like up your offer. Like we'll come sign with you. If you want to do all those things, you can, but you just brought up what I think is a phenomenal thing for people to know. If we are 2 weeks away from him playing basketball at a competitive level in an overseas tournament, dude, as his agent, I'm not letting you go out there and play without something solidified that takes care of money for the rest of your life. And oh, by the way, worst case scenario is that you sign this, we make you a really rich man, you have to deal with that awful tyrant Steve Kerr for 24 more months, and then at the age of 25, you hit the open market.
Yep, once and for all.
Is that that bad? Is that so awful?
2 years is a long time. And when you hit that open market, I'm just going to play the other side of it and say, if I'm Kuminga and through 4 years, it's been, when we don't have any other option, you can go cook. But otherwise, we're going to DNP you in the biggest games of the year, and we don't really value you the way you value yourself. And so if I'm Kuminga, $40 million for 2 years is not nothing, but where's my value going to be if I got 2 more years under his thumb? 2 more years of you're the 7th or 8th man if we allow you to
be? But I don't think that's what they want either. Like, I know that this has become...
it's what they've shown.
Well, because it's also, they would argue, what he's shown. Like, on some level, there needs to be a middle ground here. If you want to argue that the Warriors have been stubborn and dismissive of a young player, great, have that argument. I think it's quite obvious that's not what the Warriors want. They don't want to pick someone 7th in the draft, pay him $20 million a year, and then have him watch basketball for 7 months. That's not what they want. They would like Jonathan to accept a little bit of a different role than what Jonathan wants. Well, that means there's got to be some sort of a middle ground, right? Like, Jonathan, you absolutely can thrive. Maybe not in the way right now that you want, but it could set you up even to thrive somewhere else in the future. It can get you on the damn court if, hustle, rebound, pass a little bit more, accept the idea that you're option 3 or 4, as opposed to when you're on the floor wanting to ha-ha and show everybody that you might be an NBA 1 someday. Again, I get that that's what he wants.
Right, right.
But the Warriors have a seat at this table, and they get to say what they want.
They do.
And so far, There hasn't been, like, these are, both sides have been stubborn here.
Yeah, we're not a month
just,
into it.
Not just Steve. No, I mean for 3 years.
Oh, yeah, for 4 years,
they've
absolutely.
They've both been very stubborn. Jonathan, too.
He's tried, I think, to develop as a player, but the things in the areas where they want him to be better at, he hasn't shown them consistently enough to be better in those areas. And so, yeah, you've reached a bit of an impasse. And so, is it so broken that it can't work? I don't believe so.
I agree with you.
I think that when push comes to shove, and, you know, this offer is one where if you are in the Kuminga camp, you do have to kind of take a step back and say, I mean, this is $20 million a year. And if I was Kuminga's agent, and if this offer was actually one that has been discussed and extended, I would go back to the Warriors and say, you know, we're kind of open to this, but we want the second year to be a player option. That way, if you get to the trade deadline and the Warriors trade Kuminga and Kuminga gets traded to fill in the blank place that he's not happy with, he then has a little bit more of a of an ability to say, I'm going to opt out of $20 million and be a free agent.
Ooh.
Then. That's what I would, and that would be my counterpoint.
But they'll say no. So now you're saying, let's take the qualifying offer, more than double it, and offer you free agency if you want at the end of next year. The Warriors will say no. Because again, think about what the Warriors are doing here. And the Warriors are not wrong in doing this. The Golden State Warriors are saying, look, we will try to work with you on some level. We get that you're goals right now right. are not our goals.
Probably not happy.
But we are not letting you go for nothing. And this is big business, and as much as people hate this, you are our
an asset. Yeah.
And we are not just letting you fly.
Well, if the thinking is, and I don't think that you're wrong, if I'm on the Kuminga camp and I'm thinking, guys, let's be fair, Mike Dunleavy, can I call you Mike? You guys are... You're
sure,
interested
sure,
in signing us.
Sure, John.
You're going to sign us to this 2-year, $40 million deal because that's a number that is very tradable. So
yes.
We both know that the likelihood of him playing an entire year at Chase Center is less likely than you turning him into something at the deadline. So if you're going to deal my guy anyway, we would like to have the flexibility at the end of that year to have the power to either opt in our new situation or opt the hell out.
And the
out,
Warriors
Mike.
Will probably say that lowers your value by making you a free agent come year's end. We don't want to do that. We want to shop you while you have a year and a half left on your contract. And oh, by the way, are you really going to sit here and say, I'm worried about where you trade me? Because the whole idea has been, I'll go anywhere.
Anywhere where I can cook.
I just want to play.
Right.
I want to be a starter. I want to be somebody's focus. Well, I would think that whoever's going to acquire you, why would they not want that?
Not necessarily.
And so if that's Charlotte or New Orleans, so be it. Well, so be it.
Maybe you don't want to be a Hornets or
a
Pelicans.
Now, I'm sorry. You're 23 and it's not time to be picky yet.
Well, you can be picky. I'll just play for 7.9 and I'll bet on myself.
Hey, well, I don't think he's going to
do that. I don't think he will either, yeah. But he does have that ability.
He does.
And even in a sign and trade, in order for you to sign and trade him, he first has to sign. It's not as easy as, like, hey, Kuminga, you're getting traded here in a sign and trade unless he signs the piece of paper.
Is it your perception that the Kings and Suns and these other teams who have reportedly made an offer, has anybody talked about what that contract would be that he would sign? And my perception is not that it's north of $25 million a year.
No, my perception is it would be in line with what this offer potentially would be.
So sign it.
Or
sign it.
Tell the Warriors, all right, I'll sign it if you can trade me to Sacramento. And I can go be a Kings.
Well, what are the Kings offering us?
Well,
Dario Saric.
Well, I do think that
Bob
can change. The Kings have things that they need to do.
Yeah.
And we talked about it yesterday. There's still some things that need to be overturned before we get into a real resolution.
We'll take your calls on this going forward. But David Lombardi joins us next from Niners Camp. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands and Lathrop? Lots of questions to ask David Lombardi after another day at Niners Camp. We'll do that next on Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
That's a great question.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
That's right. It's question time on Willard and Dibs. And we would like to ask some of them to our good friend David Lombardi, SF Standard, often setting the standard out there at Niners camp with all of the information at an exciting time as camp gets open. Day three of three consecutive padded practices in Santa Clara. So lots to ask, lots to get to. Joining us on the River Islands guest line, it is none other than David Lombardi. Hey, David, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you? What's going on?
Yeah, we're doing good, man, and we're glad to have you. I'd love to start maybe in a spot that people don't think that we're going to start. I'm hearing so much about the way Brandon Ayuk is handling his sort of off-the-field role during camp, the way he's talking to other wide receivers. I know you're there watching it. How would you describe it to someone who's not there?
Well, it's certainly a big difference from last year, at least the part that we see. Last year he was 100% healthy, should have been ready to go, but obviously wasn't partaking because of the contract issue, and he was just kind of standing off on the side whenever he did check out practice. This year he's obviously physically incapable of practicing because he's still recovering from the ACL and the MCL, but he's right up in the middle of things. And he's talking to receivers, and he's encouraging young guys. He's laughing with Juwan Jennings when Juwan is out there. So he feels like he's very much more a part of things than he was last year. Now, we didn't see behind closed doors last year into the meetings. Maybe he was involved there over the course of the hold-in. So I can't speak for that, but I could speak for what I see. And he's been really, really involved out on the practice field. The 49ers seem to appreciate that, and I think they expect him back at some point in the first half of the season.
And what are you seeing from the receiver group? Mark and I were getting into it a little bit yesterday. I'm a little nonplussed by the names and the talent they have out there. What have you seen through the first almost full week of camp from the receiver position?
Well, so much turmoil injury-wise there, and then there's going to be more turmoil in all likelihood with a suspension for DeMarcus Robinson at the start of the season. So the 49ers have to reframe it as opportunity for not only the younger guys, but there are some veterans like Russell Gage, who hadn't played in 2 years because he tore his patellar tendon at the start of camp in 2023, but this was a legit number three guy for Atlanta. He had over 750 receiving yards in two consecutive seasons, and he's grabbed a lot of passes over the course of this training camp, so it could be that he's up to speed and he's going to grab one of those depth spots for the 49ers to start the season so that they can insulate the floor of a unit that probably is going to be missing Ayuk and DeMarcus Robinson to begin the season. You know, to compound issues, Juwan Jennings has been out now for a couple practices with a calf issue. I think it's the same one, or it could be a similar one that bothered him back in OTAs. So what the 49ers are having to do right now is really stretch their depth. And we've seen them actually sign a couple players like an Equanimeous St. Brown to make sure they can get through some of these practices. The opportunities so far have been seized mainly by Russell Gage. So keep an eye out for him because he's done it at a high level in this league before. Isaiah Nair, early in camp, he had that crazy deep catch and triple coverage, and he has all the athletic ability in the world. But I think that from a consistency standpoint, it's still going to take a while for him to develop. And Jordan Watkins, who's the rookie fourth-round pick out of Ole Miss, he's really fast. He ran a 4.37, really elite explosiveness scores, but doesn't have great size, although I think he looks the part out there. He caught a deep pass today from Brock Purdy, where he got behind Darrell Luter Jr. and Jason Pinnock, both of whom are fast defensive backs, and Purdy put it right on the money. And this came today after Purdy hit Jordan Watkins on an off-schedule play back against the grain, and that's a pass you only make if you really, really trust that particular receiver. And we've been saying Watkins' name throughout the course of spring into the summer, so I think it's worth noting that he's made probably the most that he could have made out of this opportunity with a lot of guys down. And you're right to be skeptical of the 49ers receiver group. Last year, there were so many injuries and they finished dead last in separation. But the one way that they're going to get out of that bind is through A, better health, and B, more speed. And somebody like Jordan Watkins might be able to bring both of those things. At least so far, he's really impressed in training camp.
David, how do you think this entire Juwan Jennings thing that started a couple of weeks ago, how do you think it all plays out?
Well, he hasn't been creating any sort of distraction about this. I think the media and fans on social media, they like to talk about things like this and they like to make it dramatic, but it's not dramatic if he's out there practicing. He obviously hadn't been there the past 2 days, but it's not because of the contract. It's because of the calf issue. So I think that there's a good faith agreement between Juwan Jennings and the 49ers that if Juwan keeps on practicing, showing up to work, not being a distraction, the 49ers will do their very best within the means of the salary cap to take care of him. Now, you know, I do wonder, I think the reason that this contractual logjam happened in the first place is because the 49ers have team control this year at a very good rate, $7.5 million this year. That's not really fair to Juwan Jennings. I think that the potential of hitting free agency is very appealing to Juwan Jennings. I think the 49ers would love, through a reworked contract, to get another year of team control. But I think the Juwan Jennings, obviously, that would put him further away from getting the free agency. However, he did just turn 28 years old, and sometimes practicality does have to win out. And if he is offered more guaranteed money by the 49ers right now, does he say, okay, I'll hand over another year of team control for another two-year extension? Will they reach that compromise? Is that a compromise that Jennings is willing to make? I know that the 49ers, with what Shanahan and John Lynch said at the press conference, they're definitely willing to sweeten the pot in some way, but they're going to have to get something back in return as well because they do have a lot of leverage with that team control. But anyway, something like 2 years, 12, 13, 14 million, I think that's something that would be workable for the 49ers, but it would require that Juwan Jennings pushes free agency a year down the road, and that's tough to do for a receiver who's going to be 29 years old next season. So it's going to take a good faith compromise like that.
Yeah, at least he would have that guaranteed money in his pocket to prolong his free agency. How important has it been, David, that outside of Juwan, and he hasn't been a distraction because he's been out there balling out in camp, but how important has it been to not have these issues kind of dogging the team in their camp this year?
Well, you know, last year, everything really conspired against the 49ers. The fact that they lost the Super Bowl, which was held on, February 13th, it just dug so far into their offseason. So they came in exhausted. Then they had the contract situation with Brandon Ayuk. Trent Williams also wasn't there for all of training camp. And then, you know, even then it seemed that they were in decent position to get something done, but then guys just started getting hurt during the course of the season, which might have been related to the fact that they had the shorter off season and they were exhausted after all those long seasons. So this year, just in general, they have much clearer runway to succeed, right? They've had a longer off season by a huge amount, and they just so happen to be in a situation where the contract business that they did have to take care of, it was much more easily taken care of at an earlier date. Did the team make more of an effort to get it done earlier? Perhaps, but the guys on the other side, they have to sign the deal too, and they were much more willing to play ball this year at an earlier date. That was Brock Purdy, George Kittle, and Fred Warner. The Jennings situation is a little bit different because I know he's not like a bona fide A-list player, so he didn't fall into that category of players whom the 49ers were able to take care of earlier. I explained why there's probably an impasse going on right now, but the fact that Jennings is operating in better faith than Brandon Ayuk did at this point last year, I think it just goes along with the theme of the whole offseason, which has been an offseason of more rest and better faith for the 49ers than before. So I do think that it is important as they try to take off here in 2025.
David Lombardi, SF Standard, on the Niners after camp today, joining us on 95.7 The Game, Willard and Dibs. Okay, David, let's go to these young defensive linemen. The draft picks, Mikael Williams, C.J. West, they're getting a whole lot of real positive pub. I'd love to hear from you what you think a realistic expectation is this year for those two guys.
I think those two guys at this point are higher up in the pecking order than the second round pick, Alfred Collins. And it's because it's easier for somebody like C.J. West to port what he brings physically from college to the NFL. He is low to the ground. I don't know if Robert Saleh watches some of my stuff online, but I love calling defensive tackles built like him fire hydrants, and I was so happy yesterday when Robert Saleh called C.J. West a fire hydrant in his press conference. He's an absolute fire hydrant with violent hands. He goes out there and he wins all five of his one-on-one matchups on the first day with pads. He didn't lose one until today when Drew Moss, the undrafted free agent guard out of Colorado State, got the better of him. But I think that that style of play, that violence at 320 pounds, that's going to work at any level, like, because it's just really hard to deal with a guy who's that big and that low to the ground. Somebody like Alfred Collins, he's really tall, right? He's 6'7", so he's playing with a much higher center of gravity, and we've seen that happen over and over again. It takes guys like that a little bit of time to succeed at the NFL level, where offensive linemen are so much better getting under your pads than college offensive linemen. So, plus, you know, Alfred Collins had the calf issue over the course of OTA, so he's probably a little bit behind there. I'm not saying that he's not going to contribute at all this season, but I think that's a spot where somebody like Kevin Givens, a returning veteran, can really build a nice bridge for the 49ers, at least early in the year. But based on what I've seen from C.J. West, if he can continue polishing some of his pass rushing moves, given where the 49ers are at that one technique spot, I think that he can immediately contribute. And then somebody like Mykael Williams, they've already said this is an immediate starter. And it's obvious. I mean, the arm length on him and the way that he's able to convert the arm length into power has destabilized even Trent Williams. I mean, if Trent Williams is already complaining about blocking this guy, there's probably something there, right? And he missed practice today with an ankle issue. The 49ers are saying it was minor. I think that a lot of these situations they're being precautionary with, because that was an injury that really hurt Mykael Williams last year at Georgia. But so far, so good with everything that we've seen from him at 49ers practice.
And what you've seen, David, does he profile to you more as a guy who will thrive in the interior? And if so, is Bryce Huff and maybe even Jaylen Allen, who they just signed to be an edge, do they have enough outside to where Mykael Williams can just focus on playing in the interior?
It's not going to be a focus on the interior. It's going to be part of how they rotate their defensive line. And that's why they drafted him as high as they did, because they saw him playing what Kirby Smart calls the jack position at Georgia. He lined up everywhere. It was a different scheme, but he still lined up everywhere. He was an A-gap guy, and then he would kick outside. And they love the height that he brings and the length, like I said. Like, Trent Williams even compared him to DeForest Buckner, but he said that he's a bit lighter on his feet than DeForest Buckner. He's not quite, like, he's 270 to 280, right? He's not going to be 300-plus pounds. So that means he can also move out to the edge, and he's got that range to be able to hold down the exterior. So what they want is base down defensive end. They think that he sets a great edge against the run. They thought that he was the best in all of college football doing that last year. But then they just want to, if Trent Williams is having trouble with this guy's arm length, Trent said that his arms are as long as my legs. I forgot what the quote from Trent was, but he was saying, you know, it's really hard to block a guy who's got arms that can really keep the offensive lineman away from him. If Trent is having trouble with that, Trent has probably the most elite measurables of any offensive lineman who's ever played football. Well, imagine what a guard is going to think, right? A guard, those guys have shorter arms. Those guys are used to playing against more compact players. Chris Kocurek loves moving these long guys in from the outside to rush in passing situations against the inside. And I think he's going to make a lot of hay there. I think that's where he's going to probably be introduced to the NFL as a pass rusher. So it's going to be a key part of his game, but he's not going to live there all the time, because the only way that he could move inside is if they stop the run on first down. And on first down, he's going to be on the outside. And that probably is the very biggest key for the 49ers this whole season. They have to set better edges, and they have to do a better job stopping the run on early downs.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because one of the things I've loved this offseason about your content, David, is you've been kind of honest with people about how poor the Niner defense was last year. And we know that this regime loves to work its defense from the D-line out. So now, with Saleh back and these young guys that you've talked about on the defensive line, how do you feel that's going to affect the youth that's behind them in the defensive backfield?
Well, when you go back to 2019 and the difference that we saw from 18 to 19, it was absolutely immense, right? We saw the 49ers get a couple edge rushers and Nick Bosa and D Ford, and it changed everything. But a lot of people don't talk about the fact that they also became more sophisticated on the back end in between 2018 and 2019 with Joe Woods, who was the DB coach, and they brought in a lot of quarters coverage. So, as much as people wanted to credit the pass rush, and even Richard Sherman gave the pass rush a lot of credit, he was a DB, but as much as people wanted to give sole credit to what the defensive line was doing, the secondary was also really important. You have to get those two working together symbiotically. It's a game of millimeters, right? It's very, very precise. So you can't just rely on one half of the defense to do its job and expect everything else to be okay. Both sides have to be, or both ends of the defense have to be firing on all cylinders. So I think that when you look at what the 49ers have done up front, of course, this is going to be the engine that they see pulling this defense along. But they also have to make sure that things are buttoned up on the back end. And for that reason, safety is going to be a really, really key position. It seems to be a position in transition for the 49ers. Probably going to see a new starter there in Jason Pinnock. And then Jair Brown might be a week one starter, but is he ultimately going to be replaced once Malik Mustafa comes back? Because it seems that Saleh is going to want to put his own fingerprints on a really, really key position for the pass defense. Obviously, they've got the two starting corners locked in with Diomedre Lenore and Renardo Green, but what are they going to do about that third spot? Is Upton Stout going to win that battle? I'll tell you what, he looked like Superman the other day when he broke up and out from Purdy to Ricky Pearsall. He levitated like 4 feet off the ground. I don't know if you saw the highlight that the 49ers posted, but yeah, he plays much larger than his 5'8 frame. And, as much as we want to focus on the defensive line, they also added some guys to the back seven, and they're going to be really, really important in turning this around as well.
Part of turning it around is something you always talk about, David, which is complementary football. And to have that, Shanahan needs a running attack. How does Christian McCaffrey look? Are we going to get back to 2 years ago, workhorse peak CMC?
If I had to tell you who out of all 90 guys has looked the most impressive on the practice field so far through a week,
yeah,
slam dunk Christian McCaffrey.
Hey.
I mean, there was this idiotic narrative. I don't know where it started, like 2 months ago in OTAs, that he had lost a step. And I think somebody had seen a video of him at practice warming up at like 75% speed and said, oh, it looks like he's lost a step. And it was just like, where did this come from, right? Because the clip that whoever that was referencing wasn't even a full speed clip. Well, now I can tell you that I've seen Christian McCaffrey working at full speed for several practices. And I was joking at first on day one. I'm not joking anymore. I think he might have gained a step. And over 2024 for sure. Comparing it to 2023 is going to be tough. But consider the fact that his body is probably relatively fresh now compared to where it was in 2023, coming off of the long 22 run as well. I wouldn't surprise me if Christian McCaffrey is moving just a little bit quicker than he was in that sensational 2023 season. He looks like he's added a little bit of muscle, not like an alarming amount to where it would slow him down, but probably just to be able to absorb some of the physical punishment that comes over the course of the season. And I can tell you for sure that Christian is extremely motivated and extremely locked in. I know that he pays attention to some of the noise out there, and I know that he uses it as fuel. And he made a couple awesome catches the other day. I think he's running really well, and I think that he looks absolutely great out on that football field.
David, I'm going to speak for everybody listening and just say, holy crap.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big statement that you think maybe he looks even better than when he was, like, you know, the best offensive player on the planet.
Well, he's fully healthy now, and he, again, last year, as tough as it was, he didn't put this crazy mileage on his body, right? He wasn't taking all these bruises because he played only a couple games. And then it was really unfortunate. You know, a lot of people mistake the injury against Buffalo. They think that had something to do with the Achilles, and it didn't. It was a totally separate bad luck injury in the snow at Buffalo. He banged his knee on the ground, and it was a PCL tear in the knee. So the Achilles had fully healed, and I think what a lot of people also forget is that he looked really, really good in that quarter before he got hurt against the Bills. Do you guys remember that? He had
a couple of
big runs.
Yep.
He actually got tripped up by the shoestring. So, okay, if the guy can look like that just a few weeks removed from this Achilles tendonitis that was a big, big problem. If he was able to come back and look like that in the same season in the snow when it was hard to run, that tells me something, right? Now he's had a full off season to completely reset, to heal from the subsequent knee injury. And we know what fuels this guy. I mean, he's the Shanahan calls him a psycho, and he means that in a complimentary way, but he's out to prove people wrong. He's out to say, no, I could still be an elite running back. You know, so many of you counted me out last year. So many of you misdiagnosed what was wrong with you. People were just going off online about, this is wrong with McCaffrey. That's wrong. He'll never play again. Athletes who are wired like him, who I think are going to end up in the Hall of Fame one, he's going to end up in the Hall of Fame one day, they take that and they use it as fuel. So I think he's going to have a really good year, and I think that we've seen the beginnings of that so far at 49ers training camp.
David Lombardi, SF Standard. David, I got one more for you, and it's this. Am I crazy for these two things are in my mind? A, how he looked at the end of last season, and then B, it's just kind of a gut feeling combined with like his draft stock. Am I crazy for thinking that Ricky Pearsall might be the Niners' leading receiver this year?
Well, he did finish last season with 14 catches in the last two games.
Yep.
And for some reason, like, people just conveniently leave that out and they focus on a hamstring injury that caused him to miss 2 weeks of OTAs. Like, anybody actually cares about that? You know, like, I get it that the hamstring was dogging him the year before, and I understand that that's something that he definitely will want to remove from his list of worries as his NFL career progresses. But I think the much more relevant data point, if we're going to be projecting how Ricky Pearsall is going to do in 2025, is a look at his two most recent games as opposed to his hamstring injury in spring, right? And those games were really good, and they came right on the heels of Leonard Hankerson, the 49ers receivers coach, chewing him out in the third-to-last game against Miami with those procedure penalties. You guys remember that?
Yeah,
that was like a big thing. And he responded to that by taking over. And I get it. There was some garbage time in the final two games, and the 49ers defense was atrocious. So they had to throw a lot, and you know, maybe that padded the stats a little bit. But he still did more than anybody thought he would do at any point of that season after he got shot in the chest. And the way that the 49ers, you know, there's a lot of, you know, historical revision happening now, right? Revisionist history, I guess, is the way to say it. Just teleport yourself back to last season. Anything that Pearsall did for the 49ers, especially after the horrific event on August 31st, anything that he did for the 49ers last season was considered house money. That's what everybody was saying at the time. And now people are looking back at his final two games and just disregarding them. The fact that he went 14 catches, 210 yards, I think is a big, big arrow up in his direction. The fact that he was able to get that done at the end of such a crazy, crazy rookie year.
David, great stuff. Great stuff, and thank you so much for hopping on today after a long day.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Okay, David Lombardi, SF Standard. Lots to chew on there.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll do that coming up next. Also, still got some meat on the bone if you want to talk about the Kuminga conversation that we were having, and circle back to the San Francisco Giants. I'm going to say this now for like the 11th day in a row. They better win tonight.
Right, right. I mean,
or else.
You leave the country and they go to hell in a handbasket. Yeah. So great, Mark. Thanks a lot.
Well, I'm back. I told you to get some wins while I was gone.
I got a couple.
You didn't do it.
You got a couple in there.
Brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. We'll take your calls rest of the way till 6 o'clock on Willard and Dibs.